August 23rd, 2008, the Norris Group is hosting the event I Survived Real Estate 2008 at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California. Proceeds from the event will benefit the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event seeks to bring together the real estate community, including realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and 2009. The event would not be possible without the generous help of the following partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm, helping launch the event site isurvive2008.com, Proxibid, who will be airing the event live over the internet for those unable to attend live, the Nixon Library, our good friends in MVT Productions, who always take care of our audio-video needs, and White House Catering, whose master chef will be providing the three-course meal for this black tie event. The following radio interview is in preparation for the live event.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Philip Tyrone. Philip is the president of the Mortgage Equity Group. He's the author of Seven Steps to a 720 Credit Score. And he's going to be one of our panelists on August 23rd. Philip, glad to have you back.
Great to be here, Bruce.
You see a lot of loan applications every year. Would it be fair to say that that many Americans have consumed most of what they make in a year? Not much left over?
Oh, yeah. I mean, without a question, especially the last few years, with home prices going up so dramatically without income following, as you talk about, Bruce, in your own statistics, the people are spending more and more and more on their home and you know, just not saving.
You coined a phrase called mortgage lifestyle dilemma. Why don't you give us an idea of what that means?
Well, I speak about the mortgage lifestyle dilemma, and I came up with it after I took a loan application for this $3 million home in Santa Monica. And I remember walking in and to take the loan application, and the people who lived there had no furniture. I mean, literally, they were living on lawn chairs. And I just couldn't believe it. And I was so young at the time and naive at the time. I'd be like, well, where's your furniture? And they're like, well, we had to get in this neighborhood. I mean, that was their response. We had to get in this neighborhood. And it made me start looking at the way people live their life differently, and I saw it, and it happened more and more and more as the income didn't go up, but the home prices did. People would live and put everything they had into getting into a home. And the mortgage lifestyle dilemma is when people reach that point where they're putting their dinners, going out and going to dinners on credit cards because they can't afford it, because they have no money to save. They have no money to do things, the disposable income that you really want to do. And what happens is, as we've saw people do, they start using their home as an ATM machine, you know, and paying off their credit cards and doing the things. Okay, I want to buy a new boat. Okay, let me take out a home equity line of credit, and it turns a life into a mortgage. Like, what are they living? They're living for this mortgage.
You know, when people sign up for that, it's sort of in the heat of the moment, and I would imagine that a lot of those decisions were kind of skewed when we were going up in value. A lot of those people are now regretting that decision.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have people, you know, I've had people call me and they said, you know, I bought this property 2 years ago and I'm trying to get out of this loan and they can't. I talked to a lady, you know, just 2 days, you know, I think it was Monday of this week, where she said, you know, I bought this property and I realized that it's, you know, she bought it for her ex-husband, which was probably a mistake to begin with, but she bought it for her ex-husband, and now her ex-husband moved out. She can rent it. She's renting it for $1,500. Her mortgage payment's $2,000, which doesn't include a $450 a month homeowner association fee.
Wow.
So, you know, it eats away at a person's overall wealth.
And those decisions are usually 30-year decisions. Not that's not going to end anytime soon.
Yeah. No. So. No. Not exactly.
To what extent did the consumer treat their homes like piggy banks? I mean, were they really living a lifestyle that would have been otherwise completely impossible?
Oh, I mean, it's just, I look at the people who are coming to me for loans right now.
Yes.
So every day I get these calls. Hi, I want to take a loan. I want to get a loan. And before, I would, you know, pre-May or pre-June 2007, I would say 8 out of 10 people could qualify for a loan. So 8 out of 10 times I could say, no problem, you can get financing.
Okay.
Now it's 2 out of 10.
Wow.
I mean, literally, it is the credit markets have dried up so quickly that we just can't qualify people for the loans that they want or need.
Or they already have.
I mean,
they already have the amount, but they can't get a refi for less of a payment.
Oh yeah, I mean, but it's not even just a refi for less of a payment. I'm talking, I have people that I could, if they could get them the loan, would pay down their loan $100,000 or pay down the loan to value by 10 or 15 or 20%. They can't get loans.
Wow.
I mean, it's the pendulum has swung to such the opposite side. You know, with it really skews on this whole stated income conversation.
Sure.
Where, like, for instance, I had a client who was a commercial broker, so he sells commercial office buildings, and he owns his own company, and he just, you know, he's been in the business for years and writes off just a lot of his income, so his first page of his tax returns don't show that he makes a lot of money, nor his corporate returns. And he wants to buy a property for $2 million, putting 50% down, and that's a struggle finding that a home.
Wow.
At 50% down. Now, his credit score is not perfect. I mean, his credit score is in the mid-sixes. But when you combine an average credit score with 50% down on a stated income, literally that's a hard loan to place right now.
So every risk level is exaggerated to where the lenders are looking at everything to kind of a ridiculous extent almost.
I think that's a good way to put it. The risk levels are exaggerated across the board. Yeah.
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 What about equity lines? What's been going on with those in, say, the last few months?
They've basically dried up.
Okay.
I mean, you know, in California, there are a couple lenders and you know, obviously some credit unions that will still do lines of credit. But, you know, I mean, it was possible to do non-owner-occupied lines of credit up to 95%.
Wow.
I mean, in some cases, I mean, there were some lenders who would even go literally no money down non-owner-occupied properties. Okay, no money down on non-owner. I mean, but now it's the point of 75% loan-to-value on owner-occupied if you can find it.
Wow.
Now, there are certain credit unions that will do more.
Mm-hmm.
In their portfolioing, they're holding those loans. They're portfolioing the loans.
Right.
But we'll see how long they continue to do that, because I think what the lenders are feeling right now, and I've heard this directly from lenders, they say, you know, you're lucky we're doing 75%. We don't know what the home's really worth. What's it going to be worth in a year?
Well, that brings up a point, is that, okay, let's say they're really reining in the new ones, but they're also reining in the amounts on the existing ones.
Oh, Bruce, that's a great point. I mean, the clients I have who are in the real estate business or actors and actresses, that their income is not consistent.
Okay.
So they don't get a paycheck every month.
Right.
And they live on their equity line of credit.
Yes.
So they charge it up or pay it down. I mean, matter of fact, one I'm doing, you know, a client of mine called me just recently, and he had $1 million line of credit on a property at a 50% loan to value.
Okay.
Okay, so the combined loan to value is 50%. And he was a personal injury attorney. So he had $500,000 out on his line of $1 million. And even though the combined loan to value was that low at 50%, they cut it.
Wow.
And he called me and said, Phil, I can't run my business like this. What do I do? So we brainstormed around what other options, you know, he had. But, you know, the traditional lender, we can't go to the traditional lender anymore.
Well, that brings up a point where, let's say I'm the normal consumer and I got into a mortgage that was pretty tough to begin with. I happened to buy it at the right time where equity showed up, and now I've accessed all the equity I can, what's the next line of liquidity for most people? Is it credit cards?
Yeah, I mean credit cards, yeah.
Yeah, so they just start going to more and more credit. I would imagine the credit card lenders are starting to look at those balances. And I know this is true, that there's people that pay off their credit card and they get their credit card balance reduced from 20 grand to a 500. I've heard that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean the credit limit?
The credit limit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, they absolutely do that. Well, we've seen also, because, you know, with regards to the work, with credit, I see this a lot when people are paying down their credit cards. You're exactly right. They pay down their credit cards, and many times, especially if you don't have a perfect credit score.
Exactly.
They cut the limit down immediately.
Or a recent late or something.
Oh, well, yeah. That's a surefire way to get your credit limit dropped if you're being late. So I'm just assuming everyone is, you know,
making their payments.
Paying their payments on. That's a bad assumption sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's starting to be, absolutely.
But one other thing on that, Bruce, is that what the credit card companies are doing, and there was this great article in USA Today about this, is they're looking at the industry that the person is working in. So they're cutting down the limit unilaterally on their side. They're just saying, you know, we're cutting the limit down or raising the interest rate, because in the small print of those credit cards, they, you know, unless you have a fixed rate loan or something like that, they are able to change the interest rate. You know, they just lost my train of thought.
No problem. You know, one thing I was going to mention, that term is kind of called fall out of favor. You have entire categories, like let's say a mortgage broker who was making tons of money a couple years ago, obviously has fallen out of favor. And so the credit people would look at that and go, that's not the same deal we signed up for.
Yeah, right.
So they change.
Well, you know, one other thing also, there's something with regard to credit card companies called the Universal Default Clause.
Okay.
And that allows the credit card companies to charge a 29.9% interest rate.
Wow.
If you make a late payment on any credit card, even if that card isn't the one issued by the company.
Wow.
So let me just put this over, make this even more clear. If you have four credit cards, all have interest rates of 10% or less, and your employer all of a sudden tells you he's going out of business and you're without a job.
Mm-hmm.
You liquidate some of your assets, scramble your bills paid, but you're late on this one MasterCard. The next month you notice that your MasterCard, as well as your American Express, Visa, and Discover card are all charging 29.9% rate.
Wow.
That's the universal default clause, and that's the fine print in the credit card application that you sign.
Wow.
I mean,
that is probably going to cause a few losses for whoever that lender is, I would think.
Yeah.
That's getting ridiculous. Let's talk about the different type of lenders just real quickly. What would be the difference between Bear Stearns and, let's say, IndyMac, who have both been in the news lately?
Yeah. So IndyMac would be a retail lender. So, for example, you could go directly to IndyMac or Bank of America or Countrywide to get loans from them.
Okay.
Now, also with regards to IndyMac and Countrywide and Washington Mutual, these type of lenders, they also had a wholesale department where mortgage brokers like myself, who shop the loan for you, can take the loans and go to any of those banks.
Okay.
So those IndyMacs, Washington Mutuals, Bank of America, they have those two lines. Now, the Bear Stearns and the Lehman Brothers and the Merrill Lynches, that type, they are who they would Bank of America, these retail branches would pool all these loans together and then sell them in pools to the Lehman Brothers, the Merrill Lynches, and the Bear Stearns.
Okay.
And then Lehman, the Bear Stearns would create these collateralized debt obligations, CDOs,
correct,
and then create more money to buy more pools, and we'd allow more people to get more mortgages. So, you know, the Bear Stearns and the Merrill Lynches, they were saying, hey, we can sell these CDOs or these pools of money, and if, you know, so place more loans, and the Bank of America's and the Countrywide said, well, if we could now offer, instead of 80% loan-to-value, 90% loan-to-value, we could really place more loans. Okay, great. We'll do that. Well, actually, and Bear Stearns and Lehman came back and said, well, those are more risky, so instead of categorize them as AA or AAA, let's categorize them as B.
Okay.
You know, so they would give them a little bit higher return for the people that bought.
Okay.
But, you know, just looking back, I mean, you know, it's sort of funny that they would, you know, they would still think that people that are not documenting their income, putting no money down on their on a home purchase, and having a 620 credit score, which is just borderline above subprime or people with bad credit, it's funny that they would still consider those a good investment.
Yeah, I guess it all was about how much money we can make, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're paying a big price for that. We have bought 15 houses in the last 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
We paid 32 cents on what the what the lender was owed.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that?
32 cents?
Yep. Yesterday, we bought a house that was in very good condition. The lender was owed $365. We paid $95 for it.
Wow.
So they are definitely taking some hits. So what you're telling me, and I mean, this is not just home market. The lenders are really reducing liquidity from the marketplace at this point, running scared, and it's because maybe they don't have any place to sell the paper to. Is that part of it?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the main liquidity in the market right now is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Is that good news?
I don't know exactly. You saw their stock yesterday.
Yeah, that didn't do too good.
No. I mean, well, they say if values drop 15%, Fannie and Freddie are going to have to recapitalize completely.
Which is like $75 billion?
Yeah. I mean, it's just and 25%, I mean, just with the liquidity, taking this many buyers out of the market. I mean, like I said, a year ago, 8 out of 10 people could get a loan. Now, literally, it's 2 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sooner or later, you're going to get to the point where, I mean, you know, it's a simple supply and demand. I mean, if people cannot get the loans, then, you know, where's the demand? Who's going to be building up these prices?
You know, that's the thing that we see where we're buying. There's a very big difference between the property that needs work and the property that's perfectly fixed. I mean, something like a 35% difference, because the buyer has to have, let's say, an FHA loan and a 3% down payment. That's really where they're at, their preference is. And if you end up with a fixer-upper property, it's got other problems. The lenders are not too excited about loaning on that type of inventory either. Governor Schwarzenegger just signed a bill into effect for the consumer, and national one is being signed next week. Do you see any of these things helping the real estate market in the next let's say the next year?
Well, I mean, where I just keep on going, where my mind goes every time I read one of those articles is the availability for financing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when going back 3 months ago or 4 months ago, when they raised the conforming loan limits to 417 to 729.5 in LA,
right?
Everyone thought it was going to solve the problem. Because, wow, you can get a conforming loan at $729,000. But it didn't. It didn't even come close to solving it. I mean, you know, let alone they, you know, for the bigger loans, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac enacted stricter guidelines. So, like, for example, if I have a $200,000 first and a $200,000 second, I can combine those and get a conforming loan.
Correct.
But if I have a $400,000 first and a $200,000 second, Fannie Mae would not let me combine those.
I see.
Because because they deem that more risky or whatever. But going back to what you just said, I don't see how it can have an impact unless the liquidity comes back.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I just don't see it happening.
Well, and it's going to be tough to come back if your values are declining and the losses are mounting. I'm just going to ask this so that you can put it in context with what we were just going to say. The lenders, as they look out in the field and say, okay, where's this damage coming from? I get the idea they're blaming a lot of this on what they would consider speculators.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
Oh, I hear that often too.
Okay, and I think they equate that as equal to investors, which is really irritating.
Yeah.
So from their perspective, where are they being most cautious? Are they looking at all categories with the same equal suspicion, or investors, non-owner occupant buyers? Is that really a bad category at this point?
Yeah, well, it's just a lot tougher. You are correct. They have pulled back the guidelines on all loans. Yet non-owner-occupied loans and 3 and 4 unit loans are even more difficult to get than a single-family home or a condo. If you're going to live in a property, then you can, you know, that's where you get the easiest financing, especially if it's under $417,000 under the conforming loan limit, or if it's FHA or something like that. But the minute you go non-owner occupied or 3 or 4 unit, wow, it gets very difficult. Like, there's no 10% down or 20% down. It would be 30% down. Well, actually, there are non-owner occupied still at 20% down, but not like there were, you know.
Fannie and Freddie, are they still a lender in that category?
Oh, yeah.
How many loans can I have?
You can now have 6.
6, and I heard it was headed to 4.
Bruce, you're right. Forgive me. It is 4. It is 4.
Okay.
It was
10, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 10. Exactly.
See, I guess this is my point, kind of the line of questioning, and why the event on the 23rd of August is kind of important. I think they're aiming their solutions at the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
And the blame. So when we sit there and have the investors be the speculator bad guy, then it's hard to say, okay, we need to be more generous with the loan programs we give them because they're going to be our solution.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
No, I totally understand.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it makes me, you know, it's just like FHA. Like, FHA is not FICO-driven, meaning not credit score-driven.
Right.
So you can have a 580 person putting 3% down. And let me tell you, there's a lot of lenders and a lot of, you know, people who are going to the FHA route, and I'm just asking myself, well, when's that shoe going to fall? Like,
sure.
When are they going to figure out that is not, you know, so you get a buyer buying a property with a 580 credit score, 600 credit score, whatever it is, at 3% down. They're overpaying substantially on the interest rate because of that credit score. They have to pay mortgage insurance for the life of the loan, plus they have to pay the FHA premium finance fee. I mean, it's significant.
Yes.
You know,
I can tell you that as we sell properties, we're getting approached with offers, and it's just very obvious. The intent is to buy this home and walk from their other home.
Oh, got it.
And so how are the lenders looking at that are the new lender? Let's say FHA has got a loan app in front of them, and there's they're trying to borrow $200,000 and they owe $400,000 on another house. Two different scenarios. What if they already deeded away from the ownership of that house and the loan is current? Will FHA make that other loan?
So you're saying they're no longer on the title of the other loan?
That's right. Well, they're not on the title of the house. The loan's still in their name.
Right. So it's on the credit report. So what FHA would look for is they would say, tell me the reason why you're moving. So what they would do is FHA would require a letter of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come up with a good reason on, oh, we're moving, want to move closer to our, you know, our home, and this is currently rented at $1,500 a month or whatever.
Okay. Now, I think a lot of that is starting to be fraudulently handled.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I could see what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that August 23rd, and I guess we're pretty close to the end of time for this segment, but I'm hoping the event that we're going to put together, and we're going to have a lot of the leaders of industry there, that we can suggest some things that will actually have result in some solutions to these problems. And I think the investor and the consumer both are going to be necessary to take up the amazing amount of vacant properties that are going to be created. So,
well, Bruce, I have no doubt that this event will actually bring solution to the marketplace, because you've always been the most solution-oriented, outspoken speaker I've ever met.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'm excited about the event.
Yeah, we're gonna see if we can do some good too. So, well, Phil, thanks so much for joining us. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
They can reach me at 310-453-1901. That's 310-453-1901 for any type of mortgage or credit-related question.
Okay, Phil, thank you very much, okay?
Thank you, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.